Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast. As always, up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcome you back to the show this week for the final show, post-race show, that is, of the 2019 season. The year is done, it's dusted, it's packed up and put away, and it really feels like it went really, really quick, doesn't it? Or perhaps that's just a reflection of my own life, which seems like it's constantly on ludicrous speed, always racing, no pun intended, from one thing to the next. However, don't be too upset. Don't be too disappointed. It is only something like 100 days, give or take, until the very first race of the 2020 Formula One World Championship at the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne. And I have a suspicion that it's going to come a lot quicker than we're all really prepared for. But I don't want it to come too soon. As much as I'm going to miss it, it would be nice if the pace of things just slowed down a little bit. But before you know it, it will be Christmas, then New Year's, and then before you know it, it will also be time for winter testing. So the off-season will go very quickly, but let's just get right into it and talk about just, well, there's quite a few things going on about going around in Formula One this week. As you might expect, there's plenty of things going on as we sort of put a bow on the season and just finally deal with all the last few bits and pieces and things that need to be taken care of. But let's just break down and just review the final standings in the Drivers' Championship. Lewis Hamilton sealed it several races ago, and there's only, there's no change on the top. That was, it was done and decided a long time ago. Anyways, Lewis finished the season with 413 points, almost 100 points clear of his teammate. Just absolutely amazing. Valtteri Bottas, who had 326. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, 278 points. Charles Leclerc, 264. Sebastian Vettel in his worst season at Ferrari since he went there a number of years ago, 240 points. Carlos Sainz was 6th. Pierre Gasly, 7th. Alex Albon, 8th. Danny Ricciardo, 9th. Sergio Perez rounding out the top 10. And then from there on down, we had Lando Norris, Kimi Raikkonen, Danny Kvyat, Nico Hulkenberg, Lance Stroll, Kevin Magnussen, Antonio Giovinazzi, Roman Grosjean, Robert Kubica, who had a single point this year in, he scored the only point for himself and also for his team Williams. And then 20th in the World Championship was rookie George Russell in the second Williams, who didn't score a single championship point the entire year. I think the closest he got to the points was an 11th place or thereabouts. Anyways, on the constructor side, was Mercedes who won that and tidied up a number of races ago. And they finished the year with 739 points. So many points, we can barely keep track of them here. 739 for the Silver Arrows, 504 for Ferrari. Red Bull rounding out the top three with 417. McLaren fourth. Very impressive for McLaren. I think we got to give them a lot of props. 145 points, which is almost 50 points clear of the Renault Works team, who rounded out the top five. They had 91 points on the season. Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda, 85 points. Racing Point, or what's the point as I like to call them, 73 points. Alfa Romeo, Haas, and then Williams, who, like I just said, ended up with a single point on the year. They were 27 points behind Haas, who were ninth in the World Championship. Another horrible, horrible year for Williams, and let's hope that they can get a little bit closer back to respectability next year, and maybe they can take a page out of the McLaren revival and obviously revive their own fortunes in 2020. Anyway, so let's just quickly review the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. It has been the site of some championship deciders over the years, most notably in 2016 was the last time. And, well, there was nothing really to decide this week. I always had a feeling like it was going to be like watching preseason football, where it's, you know, you're excited to see your team get out on the field there, or maybe, I guess more accurately, be like when your team has been officially eliminated from the playoffs. They're still out there. You want them to win that game, but it doesn't really have anything more to do than just have a little bit of pride. But still, it was fun to watch. It was very impressive what Lewis Hamilton did in Abu Dhabi. He came home first, 16.7 seconds ahead of Max Verstappen with the funny throttle that he had in the Red Bull Honda, which gave him some problems. Charles Leclerc, who was dealing with a fuel discrepancy, we're going to talk about that. He came in third, and I like the way that they handled it. It was something that that wasn't Charles's fault; it was the team's fault. They fined the team €50,000. Charles keeps his podium, which I thought was the correct way to do it. Valtteri Bottas ended up fourth. Valtteri was on the front row after the qualifying, but then incurred all the penalties for an engine change and started the race at the back of the grid. I think if the DRS wasn't disabled by that server glitch that they had, and when did the DRS get activated? Something about like lap 15, 18, 20, something like that. Almost, it was roughly a third of the way into the Grand Prix, and you have to wonder if Valtteri Bottas had DRS available for the entire 55 laps around the Yas Marina circuit, whether or not he might have been able to claw his way onto the podium. Even if he had another couple of laps, he might have been able to overtake Charles Leclerc, because he was only just a second or so behind him by the time we got down to the final lap. So very good for him. Sebastian Vettel, fifth. Alex Albon, sixth. Sergio Perez, seventh. Lando Norris, Danny Kvyat, and Carlos Sainz in the second McLaren, actually in the first McLaren, second McLaren, rounded out the top 10. Then we had a pair of Renaults, starting with Danny Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg. Then Kimi Raikkonen, Kevin Magnussen, Roman Grosjean, Antonio Giovinazzi, George Russell, Pierre Gasly, and Robert Kubica. And then the only car that was not classified was Lance Stroll, who retired after 45 laps. So there you have it. Again, not really too much to talk about. It was a fairly quiet race, and my weekend last week was so busy I didn't actually sit down to watch this one until about Monday night. By the time it was all said and done, usually I'm all over Formula One on race weekends, but again, that might have been me sort of subconsciously getting away from the urgency to sit down, because like I say, it was more of a preseason or out of the playoffs kind of a scenario. So perhaps in the back of my mind, I didn't have a lot of urgency to go and sit down and watch this one. Anyway, so let's dive into the news now. And this is a topic that we talked about a little bit before, and it really seems to have picked up some speed over the past couple of days, and past several days actually. And that's the possibility about Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari in 2021. And I just can't see it happening. I would be very, very surprised if Lewis would do it. I mean, he's 34 years old now. If you look at Kimi Raikkonen, who will be 40 next year, I mean, he's got one more year on his contract at Alfa Romeo for 2020, and then that's it. The Iceman's going to hang up his driving gloves and helmet and call it a career. So, I mean, just based on that, I mean, Lewis Hamilton, I mean, he's got at least got 5 or 6 years left in him. I mean, I guess the big question is, how much longer does Lewis Hamilton want to stay racing? And obviously, I think he's earned the right to walk away from Formula One when he's damn well ready to do so. I mean, the guy has had a phenomenal career. I mean, just impressive in every sense of the word. I mean, he owns so many records in Formula One, and he's starting to chase down the last ones that don't have his name on it. And you had just like I say almost each and every week, if Lewis is given a good car by Mercedes, and he's got one more year left with them until his contract expires at the end of 2020, you just have to think that the combination of Lewis Hamilton plus Mercedes equals race victories, and race victories, when you get enough of them, of course. And this is obvious to say that that race wins equal championships. And I have no doubt that Mercedes are going to design another outstanding car next year. I mean, they just have to be. They're just going to have to. To me, until proven wrong or proven otherwise, that the Mercedes just keep getting it right year in, year out. I mean, what they have done since 2014, since we went into this V6 turbo hybrid era in Formula One, is absolutely astounding. It is absolutely astonishing what they've done and what they continue to do. And like I say, unless I'm proven wrong or they prove me otherwise, or one of the other teams actually steps up and is able to come up with some winning formula and dethrone Mercedes, my default stance is that I expect each and every year that Mercedes are going to come out with the best car and everybody else is going to be chasing them. And it is a little bit ominous if you look at the way that they finished the season. I mean, they really didn't lift off the entire year, even after things were all said and done and sorted out, that they were still going for it. And Lewis really, I think, underlined and put a stamp on things at Abu Dhabi last weekend. I mean, if you look at the stats for the entire year, Lewis had 5 poles on the year. Charles Leclerc had 7, which was a couple more. Valtteri Bottas in the second Mercedes, he had 5 pole positions. Verstappen had 3 and Vettel had 2. So, you know, it was spread out quite a bit. I mean, Charles, again, this is a guy that's had a phenomenal rookie season at Ferrari and just an astonishing career that he's had in Formula One today. And when I say rookie, he's a Ferrari rookie. Of course, he's been in Formula One for 2 years now. But even last year, his first year in Formula One, when he was a real rookie, if you want to call him that, at Sauber Alfa Romeo Racing, was astonishing as well. I mean, that the C37 car was just, well, I mean, it was all right. It was a middle of the pack kind of car, but Charles did some very impressive things with it. I mean, he really showed his quality almost right from the get go. And I mean, it seems sort of a logical move for a lot of us outside the or maybe outside of Maranello, the inside at the Church of Ferrari from the big from the headquarters there. But he just looked like a guy that has what it takes. Let's put it that way, because he was so much better than his teammate Marcus Ericsson. I mean, I don't think too many people are going to draw the comparisons between the two. And no disrespect to Marcus Ericsson, but Charles Leclerc is one of these hot young drivers, very much like Max Verstappen, who on the outside looks like he's got all the attributes and all the skills and talents to be a Formula One world champion. I mean, just much like Max Verstappen, he just needs a car to help him get it done. And Max continues, I think, to, I wouldn't say defy logic, maybe defy expectations to a certain degree, because Red Bull have been good, but it's not quite as good as a Mercedes, and the Ferrari isn't as well. I mean, if you look at the entire season, you had Mercedes winning, 15 out of 21 races. Hamilton had 11 wins, which, how do you count them all? I mean, you can't even, you got to start going from fingers to toes to count all the Hamilton's wins this year. Bottas had 4, Verstappen had 3, Leclerc had 2, and Sebastian Vettel had 1 win, and that was back in Singapore. Back in the summer, beginning of September, whenever it was. And just based on things, that's what we've come to expect over the years. I think that this year, Mercedes winning more races because Ferrari wasn't able to step up and challenge them, and Red Bull and Honda slowly worked their way into it. And I think that they had a very good first year together. But, I mean, what do you say about all these different guys? But just going back to Lewis Hamilton, like I say, when he decides to finally hang up his helmet, walk away from Formula One, he can do it on his own terms. But when it comes down to it, could you really see Lewis going to Ferrari? I certainly can, but I'm leaving that door open because Ferrari is Ferrari. I mean, the combination of Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes is a proven formula for race wins and championships and all of that good stuff. But Ferrari is the most iconic mark in the entire world in motor racing. And who knows whether or not the temptation, the lure of Ferrari will be too much for Lewis Hamilton, and whether or not he'll be able to resist, and whether or not that might affect anything he wants to do with Mercedes in the future. He said he's already wanted to be an ambassador and stuff like that. I mean, Ferrari and Mercedes are big rivals in Formula One and in racing, and they have been for decades. So I don't know. It is certainly a fascinating situation. I mean, things have been happening a little bit behind closed doors. Lewis himself has kept that door open, and he's said he's open to keeping his he's keeping his options open. That's the exact phrase that he's used, and that would really be the only logical place that he could go. I mean, Ferrari theoretically have the capabilities to build a car worthy of a six-time world champion like Lewis Hamilton, and they also have the financial power resources to pay Lewis Hamilton a contract worthy of a guy with his record and with his resume in Formula One. So, I mean, from that point of view, it makes sense. But at the end of the day, when it comes to it, does Lewis really want to take that challenge on at this point, this stage in his career? Does he want to hunt down all those records and then leave it at that, and then retire? Does he want to do it somewhere else, or? It remains to be seen. I mean, it really is going to be a situation that we're going to watch, of course, and we'll have to see how it goes. I mean, Hamilton, he was being a little bit cheeky. He said earlier this week that he's grateful for Ferrari boss Matteo Binotto's compliments about his ability, and he said that it's the first compliment in 13 years, and he said that it's all talk. So if he's had any contact with Ferrari, and apparently he's met a couple of times with Fiat Chrysler chairman John Elkann, and so who knows if he, you know, if it were to happen. But at least on the outside, he's playing it really, really cool. Anyways, before we continue on about Lewis Hamilton and Ferrari and all that stuff, I want to talk again quickly about our good friends at Vivid Seats. Christmas is literally right around the corner, and if you're looking for the perfect gift for the sports fan in your life, why not tickets to their favorite team? It's an easy thing to do, and it's a perfect gift, like I say, and the best way to do that is by going to our good friends at Vivid Seats. They are a top source for tickets and the events that you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for the seats in the section row of your choice, and you can do all of that in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, they now have a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back on all their purchases, and that is Vivid Seats Rewards. So go to the App Store, Google Play, and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. And get this, every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee. From all the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. So download the app and join the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. So again, when you go and download the app, you make your first purchase, do yourself a favor and enter the promo code OVERTIME at checkout, and first-time purchasers can save up to $100 discount on their very first purchase. So that's really cool. Anyways, let's get back to Formula One. Let's talk a little bit more about Ferrari and the whole possibility of Lewis Hamilton going there. And well, there's not only just a talk about Lewis going to Ferrari, but there's been some speculation about his boss at Mercedes, Toto Wolff, about what his future is going to be. And Lewis was saying that in part that's going to be one of the things that he's going to look to on, or it's going to play a part in his decision as to whether or not he stays with Mercedes, he goes somewhere else, and that's whether or not Toto stays on, or if he decides that he wants a different challenge. So Toto, he's been there since 2013, and he's been CEO and team principal, and has guided the team to unparalleled, unprecedented success in Formula One, with six consecutive title doubles for both the constructors and drivers' world championships. Absolutely mind-blowing. Let's just put it that way. Anyways, Wolf has been linked earlier this year with maybe moving over to the governance side of thing, going to work for Formula One. And but he was saying after the season finale in Abu Dhabi that he would like to remain with Mercedes. And he said, quote, "There's so many factors that one needs to consider in your career. What actually makes you happy and what gets you out of bed even on difficult days. And for me, after 8 years with the team, it is still the relationships within the team that give me a lot of strength, and at the moment I cannot imagine any better place." So whether or not that means that he's going to stay with Mercedes, going to go somewhere else, then that remains to be seen. But again, like just talking about Lewis going to Ferrari or anyone else, it would be a surprise. I could see him maybe walking away and doing something completely different, but I would expect to see him stay with Mercedes for a while yet. But one guy that would be ready to welcome Lewis Hamilton to Ferrari with open arms is Charles Leclerc. And, well, I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, Lewis being the driver that he is, and if you're Charles Leclerc, a future potential world champion, I think that you might, I think there would be a lot of positives, a lot of things that that he could learn from Lewis and just being around him were he to join the team. I mean, let's not assume that Sebastian Vettel's been shown the door, will be next year. I mean, it seems entirely logical that that will happen. Charles had to say was, quote, "Well, of course, at the end, we are all in Formula One and we all want to fight against the best. I've had a big opportunity this year to have Seb next to me, who's a four-time world champion. I've learned a lot from him. You could always learn from this time of champion. So yeah, of course." Sounds a little bit understated, but I mean, racing alongside and being the same team as Sebastian Vettel or Lewis Hamilton would be a phenomenal opportunity for a young guy like Charles Leclerc. Anyways, Sebastian Vettel, let's talk about him now a little bit. And he's been rather mocking towards a suggestion that he's about to walk away from Formula One now that the season is over. I mean, it's been obviously a very difficult season for him again. He was let down by the car a couple of times. We had some situations where Sebastian made some mistakes on his own. That were his own faults. But anyways, he finished fifth at the last race, which, you know, a little bit anticlimactic. Anyways, he had to say to some reporters that, quote, "I heard before that I'm stopping. I don't know who was the one, but it seems they know more than me. Since I guess you journalists are always right, it will probably... It will hit me probably in the next weeks." So I don't know. I think that rumor is out there. I mean, I don't think he's done with Formula One yet. I personally think that that the window for Sebastian's opportunity to win a world championship, I don't want to say it's closed, but I think that window of opportunity's gotten a little bit smaller. Last year, I think, was the best opportunity for him to win the world championship, but sadly in the second half of the year it just all got away from them, and he had issues again. He made some, there were races where he made them made some mistakes. There were some races when the team let him down, and this year was, it was kind of a continuation, but not really. It wasn't as bad as some of the incidents we saw last year, but, you know, disappointing for him. I mean, just not even 2 years ago, he was level with Lewis with four world championships, and it really seems like 2018, 2019 has gone extremely quickly, and Seb is still on four world championships, which is, of course, is no small achievement. I mean, anybody that can win four world championships, or even one, I mean, that's a fantastic achievement in and of itself. But still, it seems obviously Lewis seems like he's a different class from Sebastian Vettel now than he was at the start of 2018. But it's going to be difficult, and I mean, a large part depends on the car that Ferrari is able to develop for him and for Charles in 2018. And of course, he's not only going to be fighting straight up against Sebastian Vettel, but I mean, we've seen at times this year how good Valtteri Bottas can be, and he's got a fight from his own teammate Charles Leclerc. I mean, that was the thing when Kimi Raikkonen was in the team. Sebastian, he was just always going to be that little bit quicker than Kimi. Just naturally, he was just faster than two. But the thing is now with Charles and the team, I mean, Charles is an extremely quick and very good Formula One driver. Not only is he proven himself to win or be able to win races this year, but I mean, being able to out qualify Sebastian, was it 7-1, 7-2, something like that, or that's at least the number of pulls. I can't remember off the top of my head what the head to head battle was in qualifying, but it was lopsided in favor of Charles. Let's just put it that way. So I mean, he's very quick, anyways. But over the course of a single lap, he's extremely quick, and it's going to be difficult for Sebastian Vettel to win another world championship in Formula One. I mean, I'm not ruling it out. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just thinking that it's going to be a lot more work I'm sure he realizes himself, and it really depends on the car that Ferrari gives him for next year. And I really hope that that they get it right, or Red Bull. I mean, as much as it is impressive to see Mercedes do all the things that they've done over the past several years, it would be a lot more. I think it would be better for the sport if Ferrari or Red Bull or both were able to close that gap for Mercedes. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, they deserve everything they get, because all the hard work and all the investment that they've put into it, and I don't begrudge them for that. But I think even at the in a situation if they're scrapping it out more with Ferrari or Red Bull or anybody else that can get into that argument, it would just be I think it'd be a little bit sweeter from a more a little bit more neutral perspective. But anyways, that remains to be seen. But We've talked now about Lewis Hamilton and the possibility, the rumor of him going to Ferrari in 2021. But this is more of what I would think is, I wouldn't say more likely to happen, but I think out of the two situations, this next one might be a little bit more possible. And this is Mick Schumacher, who believes that his second year in Formula 2 next year could be a head start for Formula 1 in 2021. Now, that would be interesting, because with Charles Leclerc, we saw this year, and Ferrari rarely go with a young driver, even somebody as talented as Charles Leclerc. I mean, obviously it worked out for Charles, but that just hasn't been Ferrari's MO over the decades. Then they rarely go with young drivers. So would they be bold enough to go with a lineup of Charles Leclerc and Mick Schumacher in 2021? I mean, Mick has proved himself to be a very good race driver, but I mean, he's still young. He's still got a lot to learn. And I mean, he's got the name behind him, and he's got some very good skills, and he's a very, very good racing driver. And of course, he's a Ferrari junior driver on top of it, but he really believes that he can take that and go and parlay his second year in Formula 2 into an F1 drive in 2021. And he told motorsport.com, quote, "Clearly, if you get the opportunity in F1, you take it. So if the opportunity hasn't been there, so that's pretty open and clear. But then the next decision was to stay in F2. For me, it was the most intelligent and most reliable decision I could take in the category I could drive in. F2 is going to have new tires next year. Those are the 18-inch ones, which is going to be positive for me, because that's what F1 is going to be on in 2021. If we could manage to do the step, I would have a head start. Obviously, it's different, but I think in a junior category, it's going to help me get more experience. Maybe also put me in a different position for next year. So that's certainly one to watch. Now, this next one was a report that I came across was quite interesting. And Mercedes says that they won't go on what they call a fishing mission to lure F1 drivers. And this is a little bit to do with the fact that, Lewis Hamilton has spoken with John Elkann at Ferrari. He's out of contract next year. Valtteri Bottas is out of contract next year. But would there be any lack of takers to go to Mercedes in 2021? I think not. I mean, again, they are the best team. Again, they, much like Ferrari, they have a lot of money that they have behind them. So they could literally go out and get anyone that they wanted. I'm kind of interested, too. The one thing, one guy I'm really looking at, I mean, we talk about from time to time the silly season in the driver's market, and how especially like 2018 was pretty active with guys signing contracts and moving around, stuff like that. But next year, you have a lot of guys in the top teams that are out of contract. And one guy I'm really watching is Max Verstappen. Is he going to sign another contract with Red Bull? Or I wouldn't be surprised to see one of the other big teams, Mercedes or Ferrari, make a move for Max Verstappen. I mean, Max might realize that despite all the good things that that Honda and Red Bull are doing together, that maybe they're just not going to be able to make that big step and get him that world championship. I mean, Max has a lot of time in his career, obviously, to win a world championship. But, I mean, it might prove to be too much to resist if, there's a drive at Ferrari or Mercedes. So Max is a guy that I've really got my eye on for 2021 when that contract of his ends up next year. But Wolf, he did say that he was totally okay if Hamilton had spoken to Ferrari. And he said that that it was important any future talks that they have are addressed in a transparent manner. But I think it is interesting, though, that there's maybe been considering the possibility or life without Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes. And Toto had to say, quote, "I think that the values within the team are that loyalty and integrity are absolutely number one on the list. Understanding Lewis's position and objectives will be key for any decision that we make. So we will not embark on a fishing mission with potential drivers out there before Lewis and us have this discussion. And that hasn't taken place because we wanted to wrap up the season and then we'll see how it goes. And because we're having a consensual relationship, we both sides need to be happy." So that is interesting, I think that that they will have those discussions, but I think that both sides have to keep their options open, and I think it's just expected in sports and in life and in business. Changes happen, and people move on to different things for different reasons, and like I say, it might be huge if Lewis Hamilton was to go somewhere else, but I don't think that they would have any lack of interested drivers. But the question is, I think that the big issue for them is they would have to be they wouldn't want to be caught out with maybe not being able to put a top driver in their car, because they just lost out in the timing of guys signing contracts elsewhere. That's what I think. I think that if Lewis is to move somewhere else, that they would have to be they'd have to be on the ball to make sure that that they get the guy that they need at the right moment, or else they could be in trouble. Anyways, time for a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. Now, looking ahead to 2020, and one thing that has been on the mind of four-time world champion Sebastian Vettel is that he must do better. He admits he must do better next year if he's to start succeeding again and start winning again in Formula One. And he had to say, quote, "We didn't have the year we were hoping for, full stop. I think the reasons are clear, the lessons are clear, and now it's up to us to take them on board. I think as a team, we must perform stronger, and as an individual, I must do better and can do better. It wasn't a great year from my side, but I don't think it was as bad as it looks, because there were many small things probably leading to not a great picture at the end. But I am the first one to look at myself, and if I am honest, I know I can do better. That, for sure, the target for next year, and hopefully we'll have a stronger package as well to fight with Mercedes." And when he was asked what he needs to do to change, he said, quote, "I don't think it's rocket science. It's always in the detail, small adjustments, nothing big and major. I don't need to drive differently. I know how to drive. We all work together trying to improve the car, trying to make it faster for both us. But yeah, you're always looking at yourself. I'm not doing the same stuff I did 10 years ago. I've evolved, and I think for the better. But certainly here and there, there are things you can always feel you can do better." So Sebastian Vettel obviously taking that on board and owning the fact that he has to be a better racing driver. He has to be a better professional if he's going to do and reach the goals that he has. And as I was saying just before the break there, that it's not going to be easy for him. And he's going to really have to dig deep, I think, if he's really hoping to win races in a championship in 2020. Anyway, this next one is an interesting one. This comes from Mattia Binotto, the team principal at Ferrari, who says Ferrari lost 2019 back in 2018. And I think this is an interesting admission from the boss. And he says that it's because they lost it last year when designing the car. And I think that that is spot on. The SF90 looked phenomenal in winter testing, but winter testing is testing. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a way to shake down the car and understand it, see how it behaves in reality on the racetrack rather than on a drawing board or computer screens somewhere else. I mean, nobody uses drawing boards anymore. That's just a saying. But anyways, when it came down to it, when we got to Australia in March, it was obvious that it was not as good as it looked. And I think that they just came to... I think they're able to get their car dialed in testing quicker than anyone else, and the other teams were able to close that gap even in testing itself. However, I was very surprised, I think as everybody else was, that when it came down to it in Melbourne, that they were as far off the pace that they were. I mean, we saw Valtteri Bottas and Lewis Hamilton just disappear off up the road, but the big surprise for me was that they couldn't even really hang with Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, and then you had Sebastian Vettel and fourth, and then Charles Leclerc ordered on the radio to hold station and behind his teammate, and they came home fourth and fifth. So it just was that trade-off between the downforce and the straight line speed and all that. It just didn't work out for them. I mean, they were able to figure it out later in the season. We did see them after the winter break, the summer break, get better. But of course, you know, we have to put better with in inverted commas or with an asterisk beside it, because even though that they have said that they did nothing wrong with their engines, I mean, there is going to be that speculation out there. I mean, ever since the FIA issued that technical directive about fuel or oil burns and all these different things, that Ferrari's performance in those races after that was markedly noticeable. And I know that they said things, it was what they were doing with the aerodynamics and all these different things. So whatever, I mean, they're not going to come out in public and obviously admit that they were cheating, but still, it does give one pause for thought to really wonder what led up to that big drop in performance after they looked like they'd completely figured everything out, and they won three races on the trot there right after the summer break, and they were looking really, really good there. So who knows? But it was just a design flaw that they were just not able to overcome. I mean, all cars and all teams do evolve over the entire year, and the cars at the end of the year are much faster than when they started the year. I mean, they have the different upgrades that they apply at different times throughout the year, but still, I mean, you know, Ferrari might have been getting better, might have been getting faster, but so were all the other cars around them, and the advantages that they had when they had them. Of course, there's a lot of speculation and question marks around that. Anyways, just talking now a little bit more about the whole issue about the fuel. So Matteo Binotto said that they had their cars fuel levels checked at least 10 times this season, and that was in wake of the discrepancy found in Charles Leclerc's car at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And like I said off the top of the show, I thought that it was better to fine the team €50,000 rather than Charles Leclerc and say hit him with a 5-second time penalty or whatever it was, because that wasn't really his fault. Now, the problem was that just under 5 kilograms, so just a little bit, say about 11-12 pounds difference in the amount of fuel that was found in his car. So this prompted intrigue at the recent crackdown, whatever you want to call it, on the engine things, shenanigans that people were going on, and that technical directive issued by the FIA. But Matteo Binotto, he kind of played that off, sort of not really saying that, he wanted to maybe put more light on the fact that that they weren't under more scrutiny now because of these technical directives that came out in recent weeks. But apparently they've had at least 10 such instances throughout the entire year. So prior to Abu Dhabi, there hadn't been a problem. And this time they got caught out. Anyways, like I say, they were breaking the rules. I mean, what they did was improper. But like I was saying, I think the way that it was handled with the fine was much better than anything else. It is kind of funny now. I mean, Ferrari themselves in the days since the race have been a little bit skeptical, and they now are quite doubtful that anything had actually happened, and that there was this 5 kilogram discrepancy in the fuel in Charles's car. But I don't know. It seems a little bit of like a conspiracy theory, if anything else. I just couldn't see it happening. I mean, if it was a much smaller amount of fuel, a much smaller, like the amount that we're talking about, then, you know, that could obviously be open for question. And somebody might think, well, okay, well, it's 0.5 kilogram or a pound or something. That's not really a lot. But I mean, when it's up to, 5 kilos, like I say, that's like approximately 12 pounds. I mean, that's substantial. That's enough. Anyways, they've sort of been questioning the whole, outcome of that. And so who knows? I think that, that it was there. I mean, for that amount of fuel, like I say, that seems to be too much, that it was an oversight or a mistake on the part of the FIA. All right, well, sort of sticking with this for just a few moments more, and Red Bull have said that they have faith in the FIA over the F1 policing, and out of everyone, I think that they've been a little bit more vocal about it. I mean, Max Verstappen especially has flat out said that he believed that Ferrari were cheating. So I mean, Max obviously not a guy to mince words. I mean, that drew criticism from Vettel and Leclerc and other people at Ferrari that says, oh, Max doesn't know what he's talking about. We haven't changed anything. He's not in the team. He doesn't know what we're doing. And the reason that we're having issues here is not down to the engine. It's down to the car. And it's just just a reemergence of the issues, the problems that we've had, and that the trade-off in between straight line speed and grip and downforce that we've had all season long. But Christian Horner told motorsport.com they've definitely got doing everything they can to ensure the complexity of these engines is policed in every area. And I think they're making it more and more steps to ensure that the gray areas are made very clear. Of course, there's always an element because their resource is limited, but I think they're investing a lot of resource into ensuring that everyone's on a neutral playing field. So, yeah, it is what it is. But, I mean, Ferrari, I think, was always going to be the one that was scrutinized more, especially for the different reasons why that they were, at least the questions that were there as to why they were all of a sudden so very quick. And then in short order, again, after only a couple of races, they'd lost that that advantage. Anyways, just following up now a little bit on the Brazilian Grand Prix from several weeks ago. And Matteo Binotto, Ferrari team principal, said that they're not going to give any public answers on to how Ferrari dealt with the crash of Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc at the Brazilian Grand Prix, which ended in a double DNF for the team, an egg all over their faces. It was just not a good look for them. If you guys don't recall, and I'm sure most of you still remember, it was Charles and Sebastian Vettel fighting for position at towards the end of the race. Charles overtook Sebastian, then he tried to retake the position, and then when he pulled back to the left, he hit the front right end plate of Charles's front wing, and then that it didn't go very good after that. Let's just put it that way. Anyways, Binotto said, quote, "There are no answers here. It is something we discuss internally. They are both very good drivers. They know exactly what to do. It's unfortunate what happened. Is there one driver more to blame than the other? I think it's not important. Maybe at the time it could have been Seb. Maybe the next time it could be Charles. They are two drivers fighting and they can make mistakes. What's important is to know that the next time it's not happening again. There's not much to discuss. It's between us. Something we discussed at our factory, and I'm happy to keep it between us." So there you go. I think that's, honestly, I think that's a really good way to handle it. I mean, if they come out and finger Seb or finger Charles, or even if they apportion the blame 50-50, they're going to be doing it in public, and I don't think that's a good way to do it, especially if they were going to put more weight on Vettel. And of course, you can make that a strong argument that that he really tried to slam the door on Charles and just was a way too aggressive, or just messed up his timing and then hit his front wing. It would have been a good thing to throw your number one driver and a four-time world champion under the bus out in the public forum, and that would have led to in my opinion, nothing but hard feelings behind closed doors. Anyways, time for one more break here on the Overtime Media Network, and we're going to start shutting it down. And before we do that, we're going to talk a little bit about Fernando Alonso. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right. Well, welcome back to the final show of the season. I'm just kidding. I'm being a little bit too dramatic. It's the final post-race show of the season here at Scuderia F1. We're still going to keep going for a couple of weeks yet before the Christmas break. Anyways, news out there this week that Fernando Alonso has said that he is interested in coming back to Formula 1 in 2021 if the right opportunity presents itself. And he left Formula 1 at the end of last year after four very tough years at McLaren without a win or a podium, and that was obviously the dark days of Honda. They started to show a little bit of promise towards the end, but the last couple of years, Renault, they've gotten a lot better, of course. Since he left Formula One, he's turned his attention to Le Mans. He's won there. He's interested still to win the Indy 500. That didn't work out so good last year. His rookie appearance at the Brickyard went a lot better in 2017. 2019. Now he's going to be doing the Paris-Dakar rally in January 2020. So, I mean, he's keeping busy, and he's, you know, doing different things. But, you know, it's a bit strange. Well, it's not a bit strange. I could see that that he'd want to come back to Formula One. I mean, he obviously sees that that there's still an appeal in doing it. And he did say that a big part of it would be what the car is going to be like, what, you know, the 2021 regulations are going to be, right? But I just wonder what that opportunity might be. I mean, age-wise, I believe he turns 39 this year. So, I mean, we'd be looking at a guy that's pushing almost 40. But, you know, in this day and age, I don't think that that number 40 really means as much as it that it used to. And I don't, not necessarily because, you know, I fall in that age group, but the, you know, these top athletes now are just so much fitter than they were. I mean, they've always been fit, but you know, just you know, athletes, no matter what sport. I mean, it you know, nutrition and fitness and everything's just a science now. And Fernando is still a very quick, a very competitive, very exciting and fast driver to watch. But that's not for me the issue for him coming back to Formula One. I mean, we all know that the guy can drive, but he did burn bridges to a certain extent in Formula One during his time time there. And I mean, the connection to McLaren, that would be the obvious one. Would they be willing to bring him back? And if so, at the expense of who? Because I mean, they're going with Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz again for 2020. And I mean, that was a decent partnership this year. I mean, they came fourth in the World Championship, and even though they weren't there, you know, fighting for podiums and race wins or anything, I think it was a very, very positive season for them. And if they continue to build on those strengths for next year, do you really want to upset the apple cart? I mean, I'm not suggesting that that Fernando would be stir things up and be a troublemaker. I mean, you know, far from it. I mean, he had a very good relationship, at least on the outside, with McLaren in those 4 years there. But anyways, would that be the, I mean, to me, that seems like the one opportunity or one place that that makes sense. I mean, could we see him go to Mercedes if there was an opening there, or Ferrari again? I don't know. That seems like a bit of a stretch, but that will be another one to watch in the silly season. He did tell Sky Sports, quote, "I'm doing Dakar in January, which is a big challenge, and next year hopefully Indy is in the plan again, and I'll try and do a little bit better than this year. We'll keep it open in the future, maybe Formula One in 2021, maybe Hypercar in the WEC. I think in 2021, the reason why I keep open the possibilities, maybe things mix up with the new rules, so let's see if an opportunity comes." Now, Max Verstappen was quite receptive to the idea of Fernando Alonso coming back to Formula One. But he said that Fernando coming back to Formula One without a competitive car would be, quote, "a waste of time." And I totally agree with that. I mean, when you get to that sort of age and you probably only have like a very small window to try and come back and do something in Formula One, I mean, who knows, you know, if somebody was to take him on, would they go for a year contract or 2 year contract? You'd have to expect it to be a short term kind of thing rather than, say, a medium or long term contract. But Max did say he would absolutely welcome back Alonso, but he did go on to say that Fernando should only come back in the right circumstances. The right circumstances would be obviously getting into the right team with the right car. But Max did have to say, quote, "He is a great driver. It would be good to see him if he could come back, but only in a competitive car. Otherwise, I think it's just a waste of time for him, but I think he knows that himself." So that the back's telling it like it is. But it was interesting too. Lewis Hamilton had this to say, quote, "Fernando's obviously a well-accomplished driver. It's interesting to see in the past with drivers wanting to come back like Michael Schumacher, and it's something you've done your whole life. I haven't spoken to Fernando, so I don't know how he's feeling or how much he's missed it, but I don't think it would be bad for the sport. Ultimately, there's lots of young kids on their way up, and there's only 20 seats, so he also has his period of time there. But there's no good youngsters coming up then. then there's definitely space. Some of that currently here are could probably be replaced, so I would welcome it. So kind of makes you wonder, like, read between the lines a little bit. Who's Lewis hinting at shouldn't be in Formula One, and they could give up their seat to Lewis Hamilton. I'm sure we all have our own little list of drivers that should be there, but I found that a bit of a humorous comment by Lewis Hamilton. All right, let's just look ahead to some of the future things, the business side of Formula One for 2020 and beyond. And F1 CEO Chase Carey said no decision has been made yet on the first the future of commercial boss Sean Bratches, and he said that he will discuss options for Sean between the two of them. Now that the season is over. So Bratches, he took on the job as one of Carey's right-hand men when they took over the sport back in 2016, along with Ross Brawn. So Bratches more the business side, Ross more of the technical, the sporting side of Formula One. I think that's his title, sporting director or motorsport director, something like that. He said he's there are some issues about the amount of traveling that he's doing because his family's in the USA and he's working in London, or mostly working out of London, and goes and attends most of the Grand Prix around the world in person. So that's quite a lot that he's going on. So Carey had to say, quote, "In terms of Sean, I'm discussing, we're engaged, no decision has been made. Obviously, Sean, he lives a unique life where he's got family that lives in the United States and he lives in London. I think he truly enjoys what he's done. He's enjoyed the experience. I think he's excited about the future, excited about where we're going. Right now, we don't get a chance to breathe. So when we get this past week and we get back to London, we'll have a short talk about where do we go from here, but we haven't made any decisions. So we'll see about that. But also, Carey said that just regarding his own plans for the future, he has no immediate plans to step down, even though there's still continued rumors and talks about Toto Wolff being a potential replacement for Carey in the long term. And that has been around in the news circulating for a good several months at this time. I mean Toto knows Formula One. He knows how to get the job done on the racing side of it, and whether or not he could take his experience and what he brings as a businessman, a Formula One guy, and all his personal talents, that remains to be seen whether or not he wants that. Anyways, Mercedes, they are going to be setting a record next year, because it's record-breaking Formula One season this past year. It means we'll be paying the highest ever FAA entry fee for 2020, despite scoring fewer points than in 2016, when they also had a very good year. I mean, when did they not have a very, very good year? They scored 739 points this year, which was better than all of the other seasons that they won championships in 2014, except in 2016, when they actually scored 765 points. So, I mean, it's a small amount, but it is a little bit different. So they've got a basic entry fee, the FAA, that is, for all teams, that's $556,000 plus $6,677 per point scored in the 29 seasons. So that means that Mercedes will be paying $4.9 million for their 739 point haul this year, which is just under the 200,000 more than its 2016, and it's over $600,000 more than 2019. I mean, again, $4.9 million is really a drop in the hat for Mercedes, but kind of interesting. So Ferrari will pay $2.8 million next year, and their total fee will be $3.3 million. And then, interesting. I mean, you just kind of go through and look at the list. So the points-based fee for Mercedes, $4.9 million. So the total entry for them is just a shade under $5.5 million. Ferrari, $2.8 million. And the total entry fee is $3.4 million. Red Bull, their point-based fee is $2.3 million. Total fee is $2.8 million. Go right down to the bottom of the list. So Williams, with their 1 point, their point-based fee is $5,563, and their total entry fee is $562,072. So just not a lot, but again, that's probably a good thing. They could use the money that they save and hopefully invest it and spend it and hopefully what's going to be a better car for next year. And again, just for 2020, we're coming back to a physical checkered flag that will end races again in 2020 rather than an electric panel. So that's been a bit of an experiment. I wouldn't say completely gone wrong, but I guess the one highlight of that was the Canadian Grand Prix in 2018 when celebrity guest Winnie Harlow waved the checkered flag early by mistake, and then so they made some. Made some decisions about that, and then at the Japanese Grand Prix this year, a system error meant led to the electronic race being declared a lap early. So it hasn't been a foolproof kind of thing. I mean, the incident with Winnie Harlow in Canada, I mean, she was just told to wave the flag a lap early. I think you can't really blame her for that, but why not? I mean, let's just use it. What is the real difference between having the electronic signboard and the checkered flag, the physical one? I mean, if anything, it's a part of the character of motor racing and Formula One, and just because the technology's there, I think most drivers of the cockpit know when the end of the race is going to be, and let's do it with a little bit of style. Anyways, for 2020, the FIA has also approved an extra MGUK for the season, and so that would help a little bit. So the MGUK was introduced as part of the V6 turbo hybrid engines back in 2014, and for the 19 race seasons, each driver is permitted to use five of every element. So the internal combustion engine, the turbocharger, the MGUH, which is the heat, and then the kinetic, which is the MGHK energy-based motor generator units, and the control electronics and energy store. So now we got a 21 race schedule this year, going to 22 for next year. So they've decided to limit or increase the limit to 3 for 2020. So there are a number of different things. I mean, you got the MGUK, the MGUH, and all these different parts that go into it. So I think if they're going to have more races, then I know that they have all these different policies in place, and they're meant to be cost saving and all those sorts of good things. But if you're putting more demand and stress on cars and drivers and teams and everything, then it's only fair that if you're doing all these extra races and all these extra miles, that an increase in the amount of components that are available, I think that's a fair trade off. Anyways, just to round it off, let's just go over who's going to be in Formula One next year. The list is set, so it has been for a little while, but let's just tease ourselves. Excuse me, a little bit. So Mercedes staying the same for next year with Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. Ferrari staying the same with Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel. Red Bull is going to be the same with Max Verstappen and Alex Albon, who started or joined the team halfway through the season, replacing Pierre Gasly. McLaren now will be Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris, so no change there. Next year, the one change we're going to see is going to be a Renault. Danny Ricciardo staying for a second season, and then Esteban Ocon joining for his first season. So a French driver in a French car. And then now the confusing one that's going to take me a little while to remember, Scuderia Toro Rosso, which will be renamed next year to Scuderia AlphaTauri Honda, will be stay the same with Pierre Gasly and Danny Kvyat, which I think is a good lineup. I think that's a good place for both of those drivers. And then staying with What's the Point Racing, Sergio Perez and Lance Stroll, no surprise there. And Alfa Romeo, no changes there with Kimi Raikkonen and Antonio Giovinazzi. And then Haas, again, this is a bit of a head-scratcher, Kevin Magnussen and Roman Grosjean. And why Roman Grosjean still manages to keep a seat in Formula One is beyond me. And then the only other team making a change for next year is Williams. Joining George Russell will be another Canadian. So we're going to have two Canadian drivers in Formula One next year with Lance Stroll and Nicholas Latifi. And Latifi will be driving the second Williams next year. So there you go. Anyways, that's a good place to wrap up the show this week. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to it. And again, if you enjoy the show and you want to help us and lend us a little bit of support, the best and easiest way to do that is go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to the show and leave a 5-star rating and review or share it with a friend. All of those are great, and it's all very much appreciated by us here at the Scuderia F1 team. Anyways, like I say, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks for getting in touch. You know, if you want to send me a message, if you've got any quotes, comments, tips, feedback, whatever you want, or you just want to say hi, easiest way is on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod. Or if you've got something longer to say, you can also email me at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. Anyways, that's a wrap. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 Podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.